if the construction industry had grown its productivity per worker at the same rate as like education over the past decade, something of like $2 trillion worth of construction would have been put in place over that same period of time globally.
Wow.
So you're talking about like the impact the industry can make globally is significant.
Hello, innovators. I'm Todd Wyant, and welcome to the Bridging the Gap podcast sponsored by Applied Software. You're invited to join our MEP and construction innovation adventure with a mission to propel this great industry forward. My guest today is Tom Stem, CEO of Rivet. Tom is a technology enthusiast with over 20 years of broad and diverse experience building companies from the ground up. As CEO and founder of Rivet, he brings his more than 20 years of experience in software development to help foster innovation for the construction industry. Welcome to the show, Tom.
Thanks, Tom. Appreciate it, man.
So let's start with how you got into the construction industry.
How did I get? Well, I guess if you really want to rewind the clock, my dad was a foreman, concrete worker a long, long time ago. So I was on more job sites than I probably care to remember. The dream as a kid was that we were going to kind of have a Stem & Sons construction company someday. So from the time I was, I always had this idea that I would somehow be connected to construction. That's not really where my professional life took me, though. I came out of college as a software developer, kind of led me down the track of becoming a technology enthusiast, have a deep understanding of technology, but then in my entrepreneurial journey have been able to apply that technology to how to build and operate a business, and organically got connected to the construction industry just really through my entrepreneurial journey. Long story short, built a consulting company for small businesses to bring technology into that environment, developed an organic cohort of customers in the construction industry, which is really where I developed the idea for Rivet. And it was in working with construction companies, trying to help them really find and adopt new technology and some of the barriers that prevented them from adopting technology at a fast rate and applying that technology to the business, that led to the ideas that we have behind Rivet. So have brought kind of the technology passion and those early days of imagining myself in the construction industry full circle in terms of, you know, what we're focused on these days. So it's been an interesting way of getting here, but yeah.
That's great that you had the family connection there too. Okay. So you were talking a little bit just then of kind of how Rivet came about, but love for you to kind of expand upon that and tell us the story there.
Yeah. So, you know, the consulting practice would help our customers, you know, find new technology, right? So we needed to automate some area of the business or improve the way that we were collecting data from the field. Kind of specifically, we were working with one of our customers, large general contractor, about $200-300 million general contractor. And they had what they referred to as a yard function. So a lot of contractors are kind of familiar with that, right? They've got all of the equipment that they own and rent to the job sites, all the materials that they supply and push out to the job sites. And they were doing all of that on paper in terms of how they would track tickets and things like that, in terms of where does the crane need to go next and how long was it there and how much are we billing the client for it. And so we went through a identification selection process, helped them figure out which application they would bring into the environment. And as we got that application up and running, you know, they were able to now request equipment, request materials, things like that from the field, because there was a mobile app component. Well, then there was a tracking mechanism. So now we can figure out that we need to process billing activity for that particular job site. And so you could create the invoices and the software and then, you know, send them to the customer, but then they would print them to a printer in the accounting department. And a couple times a day, someone would walk over to the printer, grab the stack of invoices, go back to their desk, sit down and swivel the chair and type those invoices into the accounting system. And just by way of my nature, I was like, no, like, we cannot do that on my watch. All of the gains we're getting from implementing the software are being lost in overhead and the finance team function. And so we sought a way to automate that. In doing so, the vendor didn't really have great API capabilities, so we ended up kind of consulting them on how to put an API in place that we could use to access the data that we needed. And then the ERP solution, as a lot of ERP solutions in this industry was on-prem, no cloud-based access, no API access. And so we had to overcome, like, all right, how do we get data in and out of this ERP solution now in an automated way? And so that was really the first problem that we had to solve. And we were doing it in a consulting capacity, but once we did it for that customer, then we had another customer who had the same ERP system. And so we were able to leverage some of that connectivity and kind of did a project for them. And then it happened again. And so next thing you know, we had a handful of these similar projects coming onto our plate and just started to identify a bigger opportunity because of the lack of cloud access and the open access and sort of the open ecosystem that is needed. You see trends in other industries around data, and the trend in the construction industry was far behind on how to expose access to data and how to use data really to run the business in a more effective way. And so just kind of had this compelling vision come to me as I got closer to the industry, closer to the operating model, how do construction companies make money? And then what is that tech stack that they rely on, and how are trends in other industries being applied in the construction industry for them to take advantage of their tech, really to leverage their data and how they operate the business. And, the saying that data is the new currency of business, right? It was kind of from that perspective that we wanted to pursue a construction specific approach to how you can manage your data, integrate your tech stack, and just create a more automated operating environment and really eliminate low value activity. Like, it is not valuable for someone on your team to be sitting there and swiveling the chair and entering data into multiple spots.
Right. Sure.
Not only does the integrity of that data suffer, but you're wasting valuable time that can be spent on more value added activity in terms of the type of output that person can perform day in and day out for the company. So
yeah,
kind of some of those insights that led to the founding of Rivet. And, 4 years later, we've got almost 500 construction companies using the platform and are partnered with a handful of the top construction tech firms that are out there in the space. A lot of names people are familiar with: Procore, Informa, et cetera.
The Bridging the Gap podcast is brought to you by Applied Software. With solutions for the modern project, Applied Software is on a mission to transform industries by empowering clients and championing innovation with real-world expert consultants. Their comprehensive array of solutions for AEC, MEP, and manufacturing has a singular focus, helping you achieve higher performance. With software, training, support, consulting, and custom development, Applied Software has you covered. Visit ASTI.com and let them know we sent you. Nice. So you mentioned the trend of construction industry kind of lagging behind other industries and exposing data.
Yeah.
A, why do you think that's been the trend? And B, what's some ways to kind of reverse that and get construction up, leading the pack a bit more?
Yeah. I mean, I think, this is an industry that has historically been labor intensive industry. Construction dates back, across human history for all intents and purposes, right? And at the end of the day, it's a labor-driven industry. Roughly half the cost of construction is still tied to labor. So I think it's an industry that is used to kind of putting manpower behind the outcomes that it seeks, for better or for worse. And when you look at other industries like a manufacturing industry, for instance, the sort of advent of like assembly lines, things like that, kind of the industrial revolution of the 1900s kind of put those types of industries on a path in which ultimately they needed to establish automation in the way that they produce and they needed to get more productivity out of the workforce. And I think we're starting to see trends in construction for those types of things that happen, modularity and, you know, materials innovation and things like that, in terms of how construction is now becoming more modular, more assembly based. And so you're seeing those types of trends come to the industry from a tech stack perspective. You know, I think Gartner is the one that kind of rates industry, it rates the construction industry. I think it's ahead of only like agriculture or something like that, or yeah. Government. Actually, I think it's government. So agriculture, I think, is even rated ahead of construction. I think it's only ahead of government in terms of its use of technology to create productivity per worker from an economic perspective. And, you know, so I think the trends of other industries always kind of hit the laggard at some point. And so this industry is prime for taking advantage of those trends and allowing that innovation to come into the industry with more force. I think there was a statistic that I saw that the construction industry over the past like 5 years or something, productivity per worker has actually gone down. Despite the fact that you're seeing technology, the introduction of technology into this industry actually come online at a much faster rate, right? There's a lot more options entering the market almost on a daily basis, a lot of startup activity. So I think there's a lot of opportunity to leverage that activity and help construction companies take advantage of it instead of kind of get slowed down by it.
Yeah. Do you think that the construction industry and people in it are kind of overcomplicating the process?
I think I guess it depends on what you mean by the process. I think in terms of evaluating tech and sort of investing in tech and the attitude towards tech, yes. My experience suggests that a lot of folks in the industry view tech as a cost, not an investment. They don't think about it as like, I'm going to make this investment and here's the return that I expect, and then measure off of that return. Now, in a lot of other areas of the business world, that's how you're going to evaluate an investment. I expect to make this investment and I expect a return on that investment. And over time, that return pays dividends. You know, the construction industry is one of the few industries that doesn't have like really, really large corporations with like 250,000 employees, for instance. And it's scalability is difficult to achieve without that type of automation. So, you know, I think McKinsey also said that, you know, the average large project is generally speaking 80% over budget and takes 20% longer than it was expected to. So, you know, there's things that are occurring kind of when you talk about like interoperability, for instance, or standardization. So, I worked with Nathan Wood, and he's the executive director of the Construction Progress Movement, Construction Progress Coalition.
He's been on several times.
Yeah, I'm chairman of the board of that initiative, and one of the things we talk a lot about is not necessarily getting standards in place from the perspective of, well, this is the data field that it should be called this, you know, and not that, and like people get kind of too focused on what I refer to as the schema. It's not the schema that matters, right? It's more about the sort of business process and the industry best practice around how this workflow should be performed in the industry. If you talk about an RFI workflow, for instance, how should that RFI workflow, kind of what's the best practice around that workflow? Because if we can start to get industry acknowledgement, acceptance, and sort of adoption of some of those best practices around how an RFI workflow can be performed, well, then you can start to build automation around that, and you can start to eliminate waste in that workflow because you don't have all these variations of it. You start to establish acceptance for how that can be performed. And the more we do that, the more acceptance we get for establishing consistency in some of those workflows, some of those business processes, you know, the more impact we're going to be able to make. In the West, we're going to see some of those statistics come out that are kind of scary sometimes, 80% over budget, 20% over schedule on the average large project. Those kinds of things can be prevented. We've got the data, we've got the empirical experience, but now we need tech to help, you know, make that more accessible, I think, to some of these companies in a way that it can actually help realize the benefit that you receive from it. So,
yeah. So you brought up interoperability there. How would you define that?
You know, from my perspective, I think about it like this. You know, we all have sort of that integration challenge. Even Rivet, a software company, you know, I've got data and this application and that application. And at the end of the day, for me, it's a communication concept, right? You might have multiple people in the same room that speak different languages, but can they walk away with the same understanding? Can they still communicate with one another? So you might need a translator, but will the data be where it needs to be when it needs to be there? So do people have the information that they need to make a decision or to run the business in the moment that they need it? To me, that's interoperability. Can I communicate? Can applications communicate with one another so that data ends up where it's supposed to be when it needs to be there? Really doesn't need to be more complicated than that. But for me, I like the language analogy because that's something people can sort of relate to in an everyday setting. And they don't have to get lost in the technical weeds or the technical details of how data moves and how applications, you know, communicate. So I kind of like the language analogy. At the end of the day, if someone's speaking French and Spanish, you don't have to necessarily translate into English for them to understand each other. You know, you just need someone that can speak French and Spanish to translate for the other one, right? So
yeah,
it's really just a translation mechanism. Like, how do you get someone speaking French to understand someone speaking Spanish? That's all it is.
Yeah. So how does data flow between solutions really a barrier for people?
I think it slows down adoption. You know, at the end of the day, businesses are going to be operated off of kind of those key sort of performance indicators that ultimately determine the success of the business. So if it's your WIP reporting or if it's, you know, whatever that sort of key reporting infrastructure is that you have internally for your leadership team to run the business, wherever the data comes from to source that reporting mechanism, from my perspective, that tends to be a barrier for technology adoption because it's about getting the data. If you're going to adopt technology for your field and they're going to now have a mobile app at their fingertips to collect data, well, if that data doesn't get back into wherever that data needs to be centralized for that reporting mechanism, for the reports that hit, you know, the CEO's desk, that's not going to ever be deemed successful because you can collect all the data in the field that you want. But if it doesn't ultimately hit payroll or hit the CEO's desk appropriately, then, you know, it's not going to be used because those are the things that drive the business. And so for me, you know, I think kind of thinking about it as just like an open ecosystem, like inside of our company, how do we kind of collect the data and move the data where it needs to be? I think those are kind of the important topics. And evaluate the way that you evaluate tech just needs to evolve a little bit. If you're looking at a solution, does it have an open API or does it not? You know, like very simple, like check boxes can be checked now in the way that you evaluate tech in order to kind of put some pressure on tech to evolve, open the doors, allow for access to data, and kind of make the way that you can access that data and move that data simpler. Because if that's available to you, then your options open on how you can ultimately get that data in the spot it needs to be when it needs to be there.
Yeah. So how do you get systems to really effectively interact with each other with all these different APIs?
Well, Rivet, so our iTechnology is built, purpose-built really for two things. One, the construction industry. So we understand the data profile of a construction company. We understand the workflows of a construction company. We understand nuances around job cost accounting and the data that has to be there for that type of accounting treatment to be performed correctly. So we're purpose-built with respect to the type of data that we're working with. And then we're purpose-built to be agnostic to the system that we connect to. So whether we're connecting to Procore or, you know, a PlanGrid or an eSub or an N8, any one of those systems have different ways that you're going to connect to them. And the way that their data looks specifically is going to be different. But at the end of the day, at a high level, the data is really very similar. An RFI is an RFI is an RFI. Now, the way that Procore models an RFI versus the way that PlanGrid might model an RFI, at the most specific level, they're different. But conceptually speaking, it's an RFI, right? And so they're still similar concepts. And so so we have built our tech in a way that, you know, we can communicate with a French-speaking person and a Spanish-speaking person and a Chinese-speaking or a Mandarin-speaking person and an English-speaking person. And so we kind of built the tech in a way that it can extrapolate away the complexity of how do you connect to system A and system B and system C. Connectivity is not really the issue anymore. As long as they provide access to the data, at least our platform allows you to now connect to that data and determine how you want to use it. Does it need to integrate with another system? Does it need to integrate with a recording tool? Like, what do you need to do with that data to create value from that data, turn that data into information, put it in someone's inbox, put it on someone's desk, et cetera, because that's where you can now kind of get the value in that whole idea that data is the currency of business. You got to, once you kind of eliminate that connectivity issue, AKA, how do I kind of speak these different languages? And then you can now just make decisions on what you want to do with the data. How do I use it effectively? How do I manage my data environment effectively? Where does my data need to move? What type of recording infrastructure, what type of insights into the way I run my business do I need to more effectively run my business? Those are the types of questions you can now start asking and then start answering.
Interesting. So ideally, how do you think people throughout the AEC should or should supposed to collaborate throughout the project using their data?
I think there's a pretty large opportunity to really, you know, I think a lot of the success in the startup realm of construction tech of late, there's, again, the Procores, the eSubs, the PlanGrid, the Building Connected, like some of these solutions that have come to market over the past few years and have done really well, they all kind of brand themselves as a collaboration platform and they're enabling collaboration among stakeholders, things like that. Now, the interesting part of that is that they all kind of require you at some level to use their platform. And so now there becomes this equation of needing to connect ecosystems. You know, Trimble's got a large ecosystem, Oracle's got a large ecosystem, Autodesk has a large ecosystem, Procore's got a large ecosystem. And so now you've got to create almost these sort of lanes of traffic to communicate between ecosystems, if you will, so that you can kind of get data between ecosystems. So stakeholders using Autodesk ecosystem to communicate with Procore's ecosystem. So that's kind of the role that Rivet intends to play, is like, how do we allow different stakeholders in the industry that are in these different, operating inside of these different ecosystems to still collaborate with one another? Because I think, again, as you kind of think about it from a standards perspective, and not how do I model an RFI, but how do I, what's the right workflow around an RFI? How many days should it sit in the architect's, you know, inbox before they should respond? And sort of what are the best practices around that, the timing of that? If we can get some industry acceptance around best practices, if tech continues to enable access to data more readily, you know, if a lot of the startup ecosystem and construction tech continues to be API led on how it comes to market, then we've got a great opportunity to help stakeholders in the value chain, because it's very fragmented today, from the owner, down to, you know, all, you know, the end user, building contractor, the demo, to design and engineering, kind of all these different aspects of the value chain, they're all kind of segmented. And so now we got to break down those walls and then enable them to communicate. And I think a lot of that can happen by sharing and automating data exchange. We, for instance, have launched in partnership with Newforma and Procore, we kind of power that integration between Newforma and Procore that allows the design team and that operates in Newforma to automatically exchange RFI and submittal data with the GC working in Procore. And so when that Procore user, you know, hits the save button, data will automatically flow into that architect's instance of their Newforma system. And then as they hit the save button over there, it moves data back. And what had to happen before we put that integration in place was maybe the architect had to hit save in their system, swivel the chair, as I like to joke, log into Procore, and then enter the data again. Right. Or maybe the GC had to, you know, hit save and then swivel the chair, log into Newforma, and enter that data again. So just a lot of wasted movement, I think, in the industry, and we can help automate a lot of that activity from a collaboration perspective, so data is always available at the fingertips of who needs it, and this can be done from a project perspective, so all those stakeholders working in the project, owner, architect, GC, trade contractors, et cetera, they're all creating data. They all need to share that data with one another. So how do we create, leveraging the access that we now have to that data, how can we now create a more open environment for how that data can be shared and exchanged and automated between those parties? Mm-hmm.
Interesting. Yeah. When I think collaboration in AEC, seems like one of the stumbling blocks is that we all too often kind of get into this game of avoiding legal risk. Yeah. And therefore, you know, we try to transfer the risk and responsibility to others. So who ideally should own the legal risk?
Oh, good question. Who should own the legal risk? I think, so one of the trends I think you've seen, that we've seen, it's probably sort of one of those unintended consequences of sort of tech adoption going well for the industry. But I think you'll see like GCs that use, a Procore or BIM 360 or a system like that. Now, because they can, they kind of transfer the risk by when they used to probably look at an RFI, let's say, again, I'll just use RFI. I've been kind of talking about the RFI process. So they might have typically looked at an RFI and said, well, no, this RFI applies to you, and so I'm only going to send them to you. Now, they might just send them to every sub on the job and make them assess whether or not it applies to them and make them all respond. And so now sort of the trade contractors are being inundated with more requests that they have to process mm-hmm. and figure out. And so you're definitely seeing that risk get transferred across the board, because now everybody has a digital trail and they can kind of enforce like collection of that data in their own system. Like, nope, you got to come into mm-hmm. my instance of Procore and you got to tell me whether this applies to you or not. I mean, I think generally speaking, from my perspective, and I don't know how popular this will or won't be, but, you know, typically the GC is sort of contracted to kind of own the construction process on behalf of the owner, right? And so mm-hmm. I think that a lot of the partners that we work with are in a position to take on a little bit more of that risk on behalf of the owner. Mm-hmm. But I think there's different ways to think about mitigating that risk versus kind of sending an RFI to every sub and making them respond to it in a formal way. There's a lot more informal process that can take place. I also think there's a lot of data that can be leveraged from those subcontractors on the job in order to kind of assess their credit, if you will, and kind of assess the risk associated with some of the ways that risk gets pushed downstream. So I don't know if I'm answering your question very well, but without taking a hard stance and saying, oh, the GC should, the risk always lies with the owner, right? So at the end of the day, whatever gets turned over to them, they have to take forward. So, in my opinion, is that generally speaking, kind of the, you know, each party that's responsible for part of the work should bear the risk of their scope. But you see it across the board, everybody's transferring risk in any way that they can. And it's being done in unique ways today. I think that it wasn't being done 2 years ago because the technology, you know, enables it in a way that is maybe an unintended consequence of technology adoption.
Hey everyone, wanted to let you know of an upcoming event that you don't want to miss. I'm talking about the MEP Mastermind Series sponsored by Applied Software. Want a forum to get with other industry professionals to further help improve the MEP industry? This is the place for you. Join me on October 29th as I host Jake Olson, CEO and co-founder of Dado. You will remember Jake from episode 33 when we talked about the importance of a healthy culture to bridge the gap between the office and the field. Well, during MEP Masterminds, Jake will lead the conversation on the digital divide and when technology widens the gap between teams. Come learn and discuss best practices from across the MEP industry to help this. Looking forward to seeing you on October 29th at 4 p.m. Eastern. Go to asti.com/MEP Masterminds for more details and to register today. See you then. So do you think that as technology has gotten more prevalent, that the transferring game has intensified?
Yeah, I would say so. What are you hearing? What have you been hearing just in terms of some of the other folks you've been talking to and sort of engagement with your audience? Like that seems to be a trend that I've recognized, but probably my opinion.
No, I think that that's a common thought for sure. I think the interesting thing, everybody talks about how the need to, you know, put down the weapons and stop transferring it and pushing it off to everybody else, but nobody wants to be the first person to lower their gun.
Like just as like a business owner, like it's just sort of a business owner it's kind of a leadership concept, right? Like I've always said that, you know, where you want accountability, transparency has to be there. Mm-hmm. And so if you want kind of to create accountability, maybe in a team environment, it's all about creating transparency, because the minute you kind of put that dashboard up on the TV and everyone knows that, you know, their data is going to be up on that board for the rest of the team to see, well, all of a sudden you create this organic environment and kind of influence the behavior of people around you to be accountable for their own activity, their own work, their own actions. And so I think the data is available. If we can establish an environment with stakeholders on a project to create that type of transparency across those stakeholders, because then you don't have to focus so much on transferring the risk and you can establish accountability where accountability should lie. So there's opportunities there. We just need to foster the right type of engagement to leverage technology, where I think technology can play a key role to kind of break down those barriers, create more transparency, create a more open environment. And in terms of exposing performance and things like that, so that you kind of get out of this like CYA environment, of, you know, covering yourself and putting
For sure. Yeah, I think that's a great use case for technology to provide that transparency. And we have all the data there. We just have to use it and then put it in the right light and context.
Exactly.
So what do you think the biggest challenge that is facing the construction industry right now?
I mean, I think I'm hearing a lot of like fatigue in the industry right now, just around technology proliferation. There's a lot of entry into the market. I'm probably going to misquote the statistic, but I think there was something like 2,500 plus technology solutions that have entered the construction industry, that in something like less than 50 of them address more than one use case. So you're talking about, you know, basically 2,500 options out there for people to kind of go take a look at for all these different use cases. But a lot of them are still only really addressing like one specific thing I can do with it. And when you look at how a company operates, I mean, there's dozens of things that it has to do. So you're talking about potentially now having dozens of solutions that, and so you have sort of this proliferation of tech, proliferation of data.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there's a lot of fatigue around that. I mean, it's clear that the industry has a productivity challenge, not enough manpower to go around, you know, a lot of effort put into recruiting talent into the workforce, including younger workers into the workforce, things like that. I think, again, I'm probably throwing a lot of stats around here, but it was something to the tune of like, if the construction industry had grown its productivity per worker at the same rate as like education, I think over the past decade, something of like $2 trillion worth of construction would have been put in place over that same period of time globally.
Wow.
So you're talking about like the impact the industry can make globally is significant, but it kind of starts with, you know, an acceptance of, you know, how do we become more productive? How do we apply the tech in a way that can realize what that opportunity that's available to us? But I think one of the kind of the big challenges I'm hearing just around technology is fatigue.
Yeah.
We're fatigued by the number of options that are growing by the day. They're kind of fatigued by that trial and you know, give it a shot concept and trying to figure out what works and what doesn't work. And so helping them kind of overcome some of that fatigue, making it easier for them to evaluate and adopt technology and kind of bring that tech in and make it, you know, operate with tech they already have in place, that interoperability concept. Like, how do we make it easier basically to identify and then adopt that tech. You know, that's really what Rivet's focused on, but I think there's a lot of different ways you know, folks could approach that in order to help reduce some of the fatigue that people might be feeling around the proliferation of tech in the construction.
Yeah, I think that's really interesting because it's almost like a compounding problem because it's overwhelming with all the different options on top of the construction industry having to really change their mindset around technology and embracing technology. Yeah. There's people out there that are wanting to embrace the tech, but they're so overwhelmed by all the options that it's just easier to do what you've always done.
Right. Yeah. And I think, you know, status quo, I think, is an issue. Like, this is how we've run the business for 50 years and it's worked. Why would I change now? And so I think that's a question folks will have to answer for themselves. Like, why now? You know, and if it's not now, then when will it be? Right.
Right.
So I think kind of helping the industry overcome some of that fatigue, helping them kind of change that mindset around status quo, think about how to automate their way out of work instead of just throwing manpower at the work. So that once you automate it, you know, you never have to do it again. You can focus your workforce on more productive work, right? So I think it's just about kind of asking slightly different questions that will lead industry leaders to different answers than they might have come up with, you know, just a year ago or certainly 10 years ago.
Yeah, definitely. Well, how do people get a hold of you and find out more about Rivet?
Well, always, you know, website's the easy one, right? So rivet.com is always an easy way to find us. You know, as I said earlier, I'm actively engaged with the construction progress movement. You can always reach out to me. I'm probably more accessible than I sometimes prefer to be, but, you know, but yeah, I would suggest, you know, go to our website, kind of, you know, you can chat with us live. You can call us, you can email us, you can, auto schedule appointments with us. You know, we have done a lot with folks out there that are trying to figure out how to use tech and just kind of if nothing else, can give you some free advice on our experience and if it's a fit and if we can help you, we're always willing to have those conversations. So definitely should reach out and see what we can do to help simplify your tech stack and simplify your environment and help you operate more effectively.
Awesome. Last question that I ask my guests, what does innovation mean to you?
Innovation from my perspective is just a willingness to change. So I kind of like my personality just as sort of a human being is organized or is sort of anti-status quo. Like I never like to kind of sit stagnant. And so we kind of talk about, you can talk about growth mindset, you can talk about fixed mindset, but at the end of the day, if you're in Rivet, actually, you might be able to see it kind of on my background there. One of our value statements is grow or die, and which people always kind of joke, there's like, man, that kind of sounds morbid, but like the idea behind it is that if you're not growing and you're stagnating, you're just kind of sitting there complacent, you're kind of wasting your potential. And so from my perspective, innovation is tied to that concept. Like if you're constantly learning, constantly trying to improve who you are or what you're doing or how you operate, innovation is really just a willingness to get away from status quo, a willingness to change, a willingness to adapt to change around you, and kind of an open mindset around trying new things and experimenting. So if you have kind of an attitude towards experimentation, next thing you know, you'll find an innovation that really dramatically increases your performance or dramatically improves sort of your success, things like that. So Innovation for me has always been not a milestone per se, but more so just a willingness to adapt, a willingness to change, and to look for it, not kind of be afraid of it, not react to it, but to look for the change, kind of become the change you want to be, the change in the world you want to see around you, whatever the quote is. That concept for me, that's really what innovation is how do you kind of solve problems and do things differently and think differently. But it kind of starts with getting into a mindset in which you're willing to grow, willing to learn, willing to walk away from status quo and kind of be the change you want to see around you. So.
Yeah, that's great. Growth mindset is huge, and being able, the willingness to try new things is sometimes scary, but important.
Yeah. I mean, they're even, it's a concept. I got, two boys, fourth grade, second grade, and it's something they're even teaching in school, if I fail, what do I learn so I can go try it again or change the experiment and do it differently next time. Right. So
it's not
about, I fail or succeed. It's not black or white in that regard of there's a either or outcome. It's more like how many times do I have to fail to find the success I'm looking for? And so it's just a shift in perspective. But that shift is ultimately what leads you to innovation, because if you allow yourself to continue to fail until you find the success you're looking for. I think it's, people say some of the cultural icons we've always associated with innovation, the development of the light bulb wasn't like an overnight success. It took years of failure before the light bulb became a thing. Right. And we can look back on any of those examples for the inspiration, but ultimately it's more about grit. It's more about grinding it out, doing the hard work, being willing to fail, and challenging yourself to kind of step away from the status quo and finding ways to improve, do things better, do things differently, and just kind of, look for the potential inside yourself and the people around you and try to pull it out and always kind of push and challenge to make sure the version of yourself that is represented by tomorrow is better than that version of yourself that sits here today.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm a believer in that we have to kind of flip the script on what it means to fail. And failing is not what we typically associate with of, not hitting exactly what we wanted. It's failing, going back to your grow or die, failing is not trying.
Right.
That's when you really fail. If you try something and it doesn't work out the way you want it to, well, that's a learning opportunity,
right,
that you can grow from. So I think that grow or die is spot on.
Really, just when you give up, right? If you don't give up, you didn't fail. You're finding your way to the outcome you seek. So,
yeah. The adventure is not over yet.
I agree.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much for coming on the show. Really appreciate it.
I appreciate you having me, and enjoy the chat.
Yeah, likewise. Hey, everyone. Time for our three quick Todd takes from this conversation. This is our new segment highlighting things that stood out to me. Construction is primed to take advantage of the innovation and technology that has been injected into the industry. But we can't overcomplicate technology evaluation. Ask yourself, do you view technology as a cost or an investment, and why? The answer to that first point may be found in this second question. Are you able to have the data you generate where and when you need it? Interoperability is crucial for the industry moving forward. We should not let our valuable data be going to waste. We need to have accountability, which leads to transparency, which turns collaboration from just a nice-to-have buzzword into a reality. And finally, Tom gave one of my favorite answers so far on my "What is innovation?" question. Simply put, innovation is a willingness to try and change. Honestly, ask yourself, are you wasting your potential by not growing? We must have an attitude towards experimentation. The simple fact is failing is not what you think it is. Failing in the traditional sense is an opportunity to learn. In reality, you only really fail when you do not try something new. So go out and try. Thank you for listening. If you are interested in learning more, you can visit our sponsor, Applied Software, at ASTI.com for more information. You can listen to this podcast anytime by simply going to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Also, be sure to check out our website, bridgingthegappod.com. Until next time, I'm Todd Wyant, thanking you for joining us on the Bridging the Gap podcast. Keep innovating. Thanks for listening to the Bridging the Gap podcast. Enjoyed the episode? Leave us a rating or review while sharing with your friends and coworkers. I'd love to hear from you. Send me a LinkedIn request or follow our LinkedIn page and let me know if there's a topic you'd like to hear. Bridging the Gap is directed by Todd Wyant, edited and produced by Eric Daniel. Bridging the Gap is an Applied Software production. Copyright Applied Software 2020.